Welcome to the Executive Podcast, the show where we share the behind the scenes of successful enterprises, offering valuable insights, tips, and the unique perspectives in the north of Scotland. I'm Rachel Smart, and my guest today is Claire Campbell, the founder of Prickly Thistle. Claire changed lanes in life after a successful career in accountancy, and she decided to launch Prickly Thistle, which she describes as a badass bespoke tartan clothing brand with sustainability at the heart. She recently opened Rebel Row in Inverness to showcase all her designs and products in one place. She's an activist for social change and is about doing business with purpose, with Prickly Thistle being registered as a B Corp business. We speak to her about unplugging from social media, using her business to scale change rather than profit, and how she's been able to stick to her models in an ever-growing business landscape. So Claire, welcome to Executive Podcast. Thanks for being our first guest.
I'm delighted and honoured to be here, Rachel. First one.
Yeah, it's very exciting. So I'm really going to start off. I ask taxi drivers questions when I'm in the car rather than, are you busy? I like to ask them some different questions. So I'm going to ask them to you. What is your favourite chocolate bar or sweet?
Oh my word. Chocolatey clear. I literally will eat any chocolate, but yeah, I can't decide. I'm not fussy. I'm pretty inclusive when it comes to my chocolate, to be honest. So yes, I'm going to just have to say all of them.
Fair.
Chocolate's mine, yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you in that. What has been the most favourite day of your life so far?
Well, I'm a mum, so I have to. The day that I had, you know, both my children came into my life, yeah, that has to be my favourite day.
Yeah.
Favourite days. I have two.
That's fair. You can say two. And where is a dream destination for you?
Oh, home. Yeah. Being at home with my husband, the children, yeah, fire on, chocolate. So dream destination's home.
That's lovely. That's so nice. Not some faraway island.
No, I'm just never at home, so I always dream of going there.
That's fair. That's fair. No, that's amazing. Thank you. So is home for you the Highlands? Is that where you were brought?
It is, yeah. So born in Inverness, attended primary, secondary here. Then went in a little bit to Aberdeen studying, but back to the Highlands. Met my husband super young, and we've been here forever. So yeah, it is home.
Yeah, yeah. And what was it like growing up in the Highlands?
I suppose I think of people growing up today, but no, back then I was a kind of child of the 80s, 90s. So yeah, seemed a lot simpler back then. Mm. You know, you would go out to the woods and just build a den, or think the kind of really weird looking tree was a spaceship and sit in it all day long. Growing up, you know, I'm part of a big family. My mum's one of seven, so like something like 30 cousins or something I've got. So we were always Easter, summer, we're all shipped off to different family members, and yeah, spend a lot of time up in Barora because one of my aunties is out in the country there, so yes.
And so you went to Aberdeen, and then you were an accountant to start with, is that right?
Yeah.
How long were you an accountant for?
I was an accountant for 13 years.
Okay.
13 years, yeah. And I loved it, absolutely loved it, and just learned so much. But yeah, who knew that I would be doing something so different? But I do say to many people, you know, in terms of numbers, still my thing. You need to count the warp and the weft. But also the aesthetic of tartan design is absolutely excel. Yeah. Jazzed up a bit.
Yeah, fair. Yeah, yeah. I guess there is lots of maths in that.
Yep.
Yeah. So what led you to Prickly Thistle? How did you start that?
Oh, gosh. It's like, do you know what? It's funny because over the passage of time, it's like I don't forget, but I see different aspects of my journey and different trigger points that makes me think differently about it. But I know I got to a stage mid-30s, late-30s, where personal journey made me realise life was super short and a few things happened in my 20s and then got to my 30s. The kids were no longer babies. And I just thought, gosh, you know, Claire, it's a bit doom and gloom, but I think on your headstone, it's not like this is the car she drove, this is the holiday she went on, this, you know, this realistic world that was part of my academic social upbringing, I suppose, back then, during the 90s and noughties. It was like this was a kind of materialistic formula. Yeah, I just thought that's not what matters. I'm a mum. What I'd gone through in a family sense was, do you know what, it's about making a difference. There just was a niche that wasn't being scratched, as much as I absolutely loved working with all the people I worked with throughout the world of finance, both in industry and in practice. I loved it. I loved to do a good job, but I just felt like, how could I use all of that energy for something that was just, yeah, something a bit different? And I just had no idea. I say to people, I have fallen down more holes than Alice in Wonderland. Oh my goodness, this is, and I'm still falling.
Yeah, so, you know, Prickly Thistle clothing designer, But of all the things you could do out there, why that?
It sounds like an imposter clothing designer. I feel like I'm totally... like, I studied finance and did ICAST training, but... Yeah, I'm a clothing, it sounds really, you can tell it was really boring, but like, yeah, I'm a solutions person. But no, actually, head and heart, two different reasons for going down a tartan route. One, head was, this is really fascinating. We are world famous for this industry, but it's tiny. And I didn't really appreciate that. And I thought, gosh, I mean, you look at other iconic aspects of Scotland in terms of maybe food and drink. And I thought, this is really strange. So the head part was like, I like the challenge of this. Why? Yeah. You know, and seeing that massive decline, because it was huge. And then heart was my personal family journey of identity, legacy, leaving story, making it count, the kind of emotional connection to things. It was a bit of a journey because it was bring back weaving to the Highlands of Scotland. I was like, oh my goodness, Highland dress is the region and we don't produce this cloth anymore. So first thing is, right, let's bring it home. We did that with crowdfunding, which was a job, which was just another learning journey. It's because we failed at the first campaign. So hopefully that proved that I was committed to trying to make it work. So bring back weaving. And then in the beginning, because I'm learning every day, and in the beginning it was like, okay, so tartan is this, you know, this historical cloth, and here's all of these kind of bloodline stories, there's Culloden, you know, you kind of, you know, this is as much as I knew without having been in the industry or been a, you know, studied Scottish history. So yeah, so in the beginning it was like, okay, this is what we'll do, and we'll think about that, and we'll just make whatever people ask, you know. And hope that it kind of laid the foundations for our commitment to good ethics was that I got to know all of the mills really well that still existed. I volunteered as a trustee for Scottish Tartan Authority, and I developed a Highlander's Honour, which was not weaving clan tartans, because other mills, that was their bread and butter. I understood the financial challenges that many had had and the compromises they probably had to make just to survive, you know, various economic turbulence, and we're in another one, certainly. So for me, it was about respecting the space of them. So saying, we will not weave clan tartans and we will not make products that are a true copy of anybody else's. And that was from an ethics perspective and respect perspective. But I think what it does is that it actually encourages you to be more creative. So we were doing everything else. And in the beginning, you're startups. You're like, well, we'll just have to do whatever we can. And it takes a bit of courage. Well, it took a bit of courage in me to realise I couldn't be everything to everyone, and that was becoming a bit dangerous in terms of too many balls in the air, etc. So we, 2-3 years ago, thought, actually, a lot of the people who were following us, who supported us, understood what we were doing. We were finding ourselves. We started the B Corp journey very early, within a year of starting the mill. The whole activism, proper rebel vibe was coming. And we just thought, actually, women's clothes, and the more we learned about the industry and how damaging it is on multiple levels, we felt like we could really connect and relate to that space and this whole concept of wearing your values. We were all learning, we were all finding our values again, we were connecting with them, and then so the women's clothes, and then restricting what we're focusing on, I hope, has kind of, when people come and see what we do, have really allowed us to be more creative, because we've kind of taken, you know, you can't do anything, so it becomes harder. So
we found our niche.
Yeah. Yeah, we're still kind of, yeah, we hope it won't change. It's always about being relevant to the world you live in.
Part of that tartan story is that kind of like rebellion of Scotland and the whole essence of that, and for you that's kind of like part of who you are, you know, like that kind of rebellious spirit. Where does that come from? Like, how did that build up?
I think it's certainly got the button's been pushed more the last few years, and it's just as we've learned more about the sector we operate in terms of health implications, environmental implications, human rights implications around the world, and also in this country, end of life, waste colonization. I mean, there's just so many skeletons in this closet of plastic clothes. Quite often we learned more about that, but also for me, questioning and some kind of, I mean, probably hardcore rebellious way, is questioning the story of tartan and the Highland narrative that we've had for a long, long time, which is amazing. You know, it's the romance, it's the forgery, it's the legends, it's the warfare, it's like, it's got all the drama, all the movies. And I just think, what will she say in 200 years? So this is the future history of tartan. I feel like when we look at some of those historical stories, it was so symbolic of what people stood for at that point in time. So what do we stand for today? Where's our armour? What is our messaging? Mm-hmm. So actually, let's bring that back. And then you look at it in the context of sort of global consumption, then actually this reshoring, this local manufacturing for local consumption, emotional connection again, the paradox of the future is the past. So sometimes I sort of challenge and I play with the history. I don't say play with the history, but I like to question history and go, well, actually, I know we've got this very clear image, which we'll see in our museums and we'll see in mm-hmm. national trust sites, for example, from a certain point in time, 1700s, mostly in the context of tartan. And I just think, well, actually, what about 1500s, 1400s, 1300s? It would have been district weavers. We didn't really have that clan system then. It was very much community-based.
Yeah.
And we feel like we're a district weaver. And the kind of sense of inclusion versus exclusion, you know, is bloodline tartan has been manipulated for exclusivity and showing divide in class through blood and what have you. And it's parts of the narrative that we feel like, well, that was then, but let's move it forward. So we hope that we can be one of those Highland brands they talk about in 200
yeah.
years.
No, that's
they'll be listening to the podcast going, well, we know
it all. Let's hope so.
I think it's such an amazing gift to be that we're all living. We are all part of that future history narrative in a time when they need people who are going to be really brave and courageous and not compromise their values and step forward
yeah.
in so many different ways, whether you're working in an NGO or your textiles or your food or media. You know, I think it's such a hugely privileged time because we get to make a difference.
And part of that for you is ethically making clothes, isn't it? And making sure it's sustainable. And I know for you, fast fashion, that's something that you are quite challenged at the moment. Is that correct?
Yeah. And it's about letting people make an informed decision. Because I knew none of this, like an accidental clothing, fabrics, kind of slightly crazy person. But accidental, I didn't expect to learn so much about just how bad it was. Because prior to all of this, I didn't read labels. As an accountant, I didn't really do the maths. And I think, well, the £5 t-shirt, Claire, think about it. There's VAT on it. Somebody has to have paid a wage somewhere. So what, did it take them 2 seconds to make this t-shirt? You know, I didn't. And it's just one of those things we were just so disconnected to. So yes, I didn't expect to kind of learn all of this.
What's been the most like shocking thing you've learned then about fashion that you just didn't expect to learn?
Gosh, my shocking thing. Yeah, as I say, it's about, we want to inform people about, inform women, because I think we're big influencers. Mm-hmm. We're, you know, in terms of our, in the homes, our partners, our children, what we give to people. But the biggest thing is the extent of chemicals and polymer-based textiles that we're wearing or next to our skin. NHS sheets, for example, polymer-based, 50% polyester, 50% cotton, the polyester clothes that we wear to the gym to keep healthy. There is all of this chemical, which effectively comes from a mineral fibre, and we know other mineral fibres have been hugely damaging to the health of an individual. And never mind the extraction of it and the processing of it and the end of life, but it's as it's worn next to the biggest organ in your body. So that is one area that I think there's not enough research done on it in a very, you know, independent way at the government level. I just think we do it. We think about what we put inside our bodies now. We think about the health warnings, whether it's alcohol, whether it's tobacco, whether it's certain food groups, etc. But we are eating our clothes, you know, because we are absorbing mm-hmm. the fibres and the chemicals that are used on them. We're absorbing certain detergents or soft. We're absorbing that. We're absorbing perfumes. We're absorbing creams. You know, all of this thing, and we are eating that. But yet, we don't have the same system in place that just lets people know. And I always kind of use the analogy of when we bring up our children, there's a road to cross, and you could cross that road anywhere. But we always give them as much information to let them know about the implications of crossing the road at a different place. We do try and tell them not to cross the road, but ultimately, you know, they can decide. And I think that's the way when it comes to consumption and textiles. I don't think we've got that level of knowledge out there that should come from an independent basis, like a government and a health perspective, so that people can just make informed decisions. Then that takes us down the whole economics, because eating more ethical food products and wearing more ethical clothes and living more ethical, it costs money. But we've got this really crazy situation where we've got a huge gap in terms of the wealth distribution. So
you've been down in Hollywood lately. Yay. Anyway, and you were able to bring this to the table when you were there.
Yeah, so no, I was kind of invited by, SCDI, formerly SCDI, now Prosper, to come and speak at a Business with Purpose event, which had a few MSPs there, Richard Lockhead, MSP for Small Business and Innovation and things, and a few other party members, and a group of academics, NGOs, other businesses. So yeah, so it was really quite, it was really, you know, for me, it was like, really sort of humbling that, you know, there were three of us on the panel, huge multinational business, and another person who represented a financial again, another huge business, and here's this little B Corp mill from the Highlands of Scotland, but we're representing the Highlands and talking about business with purpose. But yeah, no, it was really great to be in that room and actually, you know, just question in terms of economy and democracy and what shape and form should businesses take, you know, thinking about limiting size of companies, limiting hyper profits, you know, thinking about how we can enforce legally the pay gap in businesses, because we've still got extreme multiple, you know, factors of difference between the lowest paid person in some organisations to the person who sits up at the top of the table. And, you know, and that's just, we want to kind of think about how we can all have that healthier quality of life, but we need to think about that distribution of wealth. So it was really great to be in there. And once I started, they couldn't shut me up. But I think a lot of people in the room really like seeing the small business, because I think, you know, Scotland's made, you know, the bulk of our society is made up, our economy made up of micro and SMEs, and it should be celebrating and high-fiving all of those businesses who don't want to be big. But if they're creating interest and knowledge and awareness in a particular product or service, then actually to see another business in another region do something similar, that is way, for me, that is way better than a unicorn announcement or an investor from some overseas, you know, coming in with X million or whatever. To see that, that is what I think people want to hear. And I think that whole micro business drives the social equity and sorts out this kind of economic problem we have. So yes, it was nice to kind of voice that and try and be a business that's a living, breathing model who stands by that, so that you can prove that it works. We, you know, it's, no one should own the market in any stretch. And I think, yeah, so it was good. I don't know if I'll get invited back, but it was good to be down there.
Unlock exclusive content from all our newspaper titles with the Highland News and Media Digital Plus subscription. Get access to news in your area online through e-edition, or take the headlines on the go with our user-friendly app. With news at your fingertips, wherever life takes you, all this for £49.88 a year. Subscribe now at hmmedia.co.uk to stay informed, connected, and engaged with Digital Plus.
Yeah, and how do you make it work? You know, obviously a lot of people, big business is a thing and they're looking to scale up all the time. But you've talked before about you want to scale change. That's the thing. You know, how do you stick to your guns in that? How do you stay so resolved in that and not see the big pound signs? Like,
I think it goes back to, you know, it's a lot of psychology and understanding what do you value more. Is it wisdom and ethics over, you know, status and wealth? You know, where does all of that sit? And I think so it is a testament to your personality and your traits, I think, definitely. But I just throw back the question, go, why do you want to be big? You know, and you hear stories of a lot of people who've done things like that, and then they've got to that stage where it's so big, they are so stressed, they don't enjoy it anymore. You know, they've got a juggernaut of a business that actually, if something goes wrong, that's a major disaster. So you actually hear a lot of people not enjoying it. And then I go, well, why? And then, you know, at the end of the day, we only have one life. We forget that we're placing so much value on materialistic things that have come to us so easily because we have so much wealth. We don't even know how fortunate we are. So I just go, why would you? Mm-hmm. You know, just if someone can tell me why, is a really good idea, and why they would feel better about themselves doing that rather than being the person that helped see another 20 businesses like what they do come across the region. So if people want to live in a certain location, they can then, you know, they don't have to go and find a job in another city because it's an area of specialism that they're interested in. You know, the feel-good factor that comes from that will outweigh all of the stuff they've been able to buy that they probably don't really value because it's just come so easy. So I just throw back and go, well, why would you? Why would you not want to stay small? Yeah. Small is beautiful.
I love it. And, you know, part of what you've done as well is you are quite anti maybe business marketing in a way. You deleted social media.
Yeah.
Was it the year before last?
It was October 22.
Yeah.
Yes. What we're coming up 2 years in October. Oh, God, it's amazing. And we're still going. So there we go. This is maybe something for people to think about. It's like we are still going. And we're meeting new people all the time. And the power of word of mouth is such a beautiful thing. Validated experiences from one person to another, it reminds us we're human. So yeah, I think we were a very social company in terms of social media platforms in the beginning. 2017, when we were getting going, the old campaign, I was like, oh God, what are we going to do? And then we went back to it. 2018, 19, 20, and 21, but it was in 21 you could start, I just felt like, gosh, I mean, it was, I think COVID absolutely probably did accelerate this whole addiction a lot of us have. I did, you know, you're just constantly checking. And I think it was September 22 in London, and we were down there doing a pop-up store, and it was this woman who came into the pop-up store, and I had been kind of constantly conflicting, like, oh my god, I have to go to TikTok, I have to do reels, I have to do like dances to sell us. I'm like, I don't mind dancing and doing something, but I'm like, oh, I was just questioning this, you know, people giving me advice, this is what you need to do, you'll go viral if you do this, it's so good. So there's something niggling, and you always was this constant sense of being measured when you have no control over, you know, taking Meta, for example, as a business and actually understanding their ethics and their agenda. And I think there's been a lot of articles that have proven that they will put profit above anything else. So conflicted with the models of the platform, who owns it all. But yeah, just this content, then you become this kind of, feel like you're constantly judged on how many people liked it, how many people seen it, you know, and it's like, God, I mean, people will never meet you. And like, oh, I have X million followers, but you don't know an X million people. So you start to think about, is quality over quantity? But this was what's happening. So yes, so this lady came into the pop-up and I said, okay, she'd like to order a kill. I said, brilliant. So how would you like us to, will we email you? She's like, no, don't do any of that. Don't do social media. I don't do email. This is my phone number. They phoned me. And then when she walked out, I thought, how nice must that be to not have, and I thought, and then I was lying, we were lying in the Airbnb that night. And I was just sitting there with Mary, where it's been, we were lying in the fold-out bed, and my mum and another lady upstairs who was helping. And I said, do you know what, Mary? That's it. I'm done. She's like, what? So I woke up in the morning, I was like, that's it. We're done. And I did a bit of research, to be fair, like Lush UK, they're off it. And there's a lot of other people who've done, and you've seen celebrities at times going, I mentally can't cope, I have to come off this. So the initial reaction for so many people was like, oh, my goodness, yes, because it's like so draining and it's a bit of a black hole and it's a FOMO thing and it's information overload. So here we are, a year and a half nearly, and we're off the platforms. This is always the thing I feel like I've got to explain. I don't have an issue with social, digital social. I think that's really so social on every level. I am a social person. It's about the responsibility of that platform and how they use your data, because we live in a world where data and we've seen what AI is so powerful to so many people, but can be so destructive. And I think that's my fundamental problem with it, in terms of these platforms initially brought people on board in a very personal way. It was a personal thing. It was find your friends, you know, connect with people, share your pictures with your family who you'll never see on a regular basis, etc. So there was this really simple personal space. But as the data became valuable, this could be from a, you know, an election campaign to all sorts of things, it was mined, and people's insecurities, I think, were then, from an algorithm, were then targeted for commercial opportunities as well. And I feel like, and then you're seeing the cases that we're seeing in this country and all over the world in terms of mental health and harm coming to people, young people. I want to make a stance, I want to be an activist against the fundamentals of the business behind it, but not being social. So we're still social. For being a business, I feel like I'm obviously posting to try and generate interest in my product, and it feels uncomfortable, and that's just the ethics of me, uncomfortable to do that in a space where people just want to talk to pals. It's like you've been out in the pub and I'm like, yay, Rachel, buy a scarf, you know, kind of try and lure it in. You're like, you're there with your pals, you know, try and catch you to go to the toilet, try and, you know, it's like, get out of my space. So I feel like if a new platform could come up that was very much old Yellow Pages, for anyone that remembers that, I think absolutely we would be on it, because then you know what you're signing up for, what you're going to see, and I feel more ethically at peace, that's about. So yeah, so I would recommend it, and I think if we do that, we will see the birth of that platform. That will come. Yeah. And they can monetize it, absolutely. Advertising, spot, you know, clear as day as to what it's about. But there's this whole invasion, and then all the collateral damages coming off the back of it. Young ones, I mean, it's just, yeah.
And I mean, it's not obviously been bad for you, because in that year and a half, you've still got your Weavers in Everton, but you've since opened Rebel Row in the city of Inverness. You know,
where it's all happening, you know. So if anyone's never been to Inverness, then they better get up here and see what's happening. But yeah, no, it's you listen. I always like to listen to lots of other people who've done, you've got advice and done other things, and so you get a lot of advice like, oh, your brand would be brilliant. And I always think, we don't have a brand, we just make clothes, you know, that's what we do. Really cool down here, and you should go there, and you should go there. And then, yeah, kind of a year ago, having done some of that, 2023, and I thought, you know what, there's just no place like home, you know, and would Muhammad come to the mountain if we're like, and it's realizing that kind of local manufacturing for local consumption, local appreciation, it was becoming clearer and clearer that we were about making this really cool tartan fabric in the Highlands for the people of the Highlands. This is what we were meant to do all along. So we've kind of thought, right, let's create this really cool space that's super easy to get to, because where we are at the mill, it's not the most accessible. And we want to create a really nice welcoming space. Anyone and everyone, all ages, come in, find out what we do, find out what we don't do. Totally get that we're bonkers, but it's all right. They're bonkers and all. But yeah, no, it's so nice to actually have this space and then connect with the independent business community that's up here as well in the town. I spent 5 or 6 years literally in an industrial state. So it's quite nice to get out and see all the food options. My goodness, amazing food producers in this place. But yeah, so connecting with all those businesses, yeah. And then yeah, just really excited about, there's headwinds for sure for businesses right now, but that's okay, because you unite people together and you get your kind of find your hope and you're like, right, let's do something about it. So yeah, so it's really exciting to be here. Love it.
Yeah, and you have lots of plans for Rebel Row. You know, we've talked about sustainable fashion, and part of what you think now is we actually don't need to make any more new clothes. So yeah. Tell me a little bit about your idea of Eros. Is that how you pronounce it?
So close. Okay. So yeah, this whole concept of realizing that we have been massively producing globally, like way more textiles than we ever need. And a lot of it will last forever, the kind of polymer-based stuff. But it was realizing that actually, in terms of the quote-unquote fashion industry, clothing industry, is that we probably need to see a major shift from just constantly producing new and seeing it as a disposable piece, is actually we kind of look at that industry as a whole and think about producing less, but really being a bit more like Europe and committing to this kind of fossil-free future. So that's plant and animal fibres, which we all used to wear before they made tights. BT before tights, we all wore plant and animal fibers, silks, linens, wools, hemp, you know, it's all plant or animal fibers. So yeah, so we recognize that we need to deal with over consumption, we need to produce less, so that needs to happen. And then you've got all the stuff, so what are we going to do with it? And even when it's we're producing less of that more natural fabric for garments, how can we really extend the lifetime of these fabrics, the fabric over fashion? It's circular economy. It's like really thinking about this kind of reuse, reimagining in a way that actually doesn't create waste. So we've designed out waste, I think, in a really clever way. But I have to give, you know, all credit to the past, because this is mostly how they made clothes in the past, I'll be honest. Really simple. But yeah, Orez is about how can we bring something which doesn't actually exist in the UK, and I don't know if it exists anywhere else in the world, but it's not tailoring, it's not alterations, but the name is. So we feel in many respects, in terms of every aspect of our life, we have to look backwards to look forwards, in the sense of we need to kind of unwind some of our innovation because it's not terribly good. So yes, so to look forward, you have to look back, and you take the word zero and you spell it backwards, and it's called Orez. It sounds very French, I know, but it's okay. I could do a Scottish accent, Orez. But Orez is a way of making clothes with zero fabric waste, and it's something we want to bring to Inverness, and we're going to start a whole range of workshops. You covered our little No Bra Club. Yes. I had a lady say to me, do you make bras? I'm like, no, I don't make bras. No Bra Club. But what we're going to do is show women this opportunity to really think about the fabrics they're buying. This is what they're buying, but this is all maybe what they're being given to by a loved one or a loved one who's passed away. So all of these emotional connections to all these fabrics, but if we design clothing in a very simple system, it can constantly come apart and be reinvented and put into another garment to come apart. So this Orez way of making is where ladies can come in. So we're going to do some trials with the No Bra Club and let people actually see it happen, because it's something that's not mainstream. We're like, what? You know, I know, I understand bespoke making, bespoke Savile Row suits, etc. You understand alterations, but taking it apart, that's not just upcycling. You know, there's a slight difference to the upcycling space within fashion as well. So we're going to do the workshop so people can see it. So we'll do a demonstration with some of the fabrics from my brother's clothes, and make something that I could wear. He was a boy, much thinner than me, so I can't wear any of his clothes. So I'm going to make something with his clothes, and then we'll have a lady volunteer for the next one, take along some of her things, and we hope to go back to the word of mouth thing, because it's not something you could just put in a post. They can really explain that, actually, oh my god, this is so amazing. So all the fabrics they have in their home, and from loved ones, or when, you know, I love the fact that being where we are, we've got a couple of charity stores on the street. I love seeing people who will go to a charity store and then come in here as well. Mm-hmm. It's just so fantastic. You're buying only a few new pieces a year, but absolutely having fun and thrifting and secondhand stuff. So yeah, so somebody can go to a charity shop and go, oh my goodness, I love this fabric of this jacket, but it'd be so cool if it's trousers. But then I love the fabric so much, it'd be nice if I could actually turn it back into a jacket, or my daughter could have them. So we've created a way of making that makes that possible. So it's quite exciting to kind of, yeah, what's the latest thing? What was the last major thing that came out of the Highlands apart from Culloden or something? This is kind of like, you know, a new form of Highland dress, maybe.
Yeah.
The Arrays version.
But that's helping change and make absolutely that change that you want to be seen in the future. That's going to help the future.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
No, I think it's an incredible idea. It's very exciting.
We can't wait to see people enjoy it and talk about it and see how that goes through a community. And then if it is something that becomes loved and there's demand for it, then absolutely seeing hubs like what we do, sharing our knowledge with other people, mm-hmm, in other regions, so that, you know, every large town and city has someone who can do that for you. So yeah, that, going back to one of the points you raised, that's our impact, where we can create that part of change. That's amazing. It's not like, oh, we're 200 employees now. No, we're still 10. But look what we helped create across Scotland. So it's quite exciting to have the first one on Thursday. So yeah. Yes.
There, you talked about your brother, and you've got a picture of your brother here in the store as well.
Yeah.
He's a really important part of why you're doing what you're doing, I guess, and why you've got the attitude you do to life, isn't he?
It kind of, I think we all have a ground zero, don't we? Mm-hmm. Like, what's the worst that could happen? And it gives you a bit of courage. But there's also that reminder, life is so fragile. We never know how short it might be. And even if we live a full life, it's still very, very short. So there's this kind of like, make a difference piece that I get from that part of my life. It's like, you know, what's the worst that can happen? So it kind of makes you not completely fearless, but gives me a bit more courage. Like, what's the worst that could happen, Claire? Just, you know, what happened to Paul was the worst thing that could happen. This is not going to happen, this scenario. So let's just go for it. Let's ask the politicians this question. But yeah, it's a kind of the thing that gives the courage, mm-hmm, to be fearless. And it's nice. Yeah, I don't know, it's just,
he's part of this.
It's part of it, yeah. People are like, oh my goodness, Claire, what are you talking about? But yeah, no, it's just made you realise. It just changed you. So many people go through things like that. And yeah, it does completely transform you as an individual. And it's what you do with it. So yeah, I just felt like, yeah, it's just become part of me.
And how do you do all this? Do you know what I mean? You're a business owner, you're creating no bra clubs, weaving, you're a mum. How do you manage to juggle everything that you do?
I don't know if I juggle very well, but I try. God loves a tryer. I try to juggle. I drop balls, I have to say. I drop lots of balls, and it's not intentionally, it's just my inability. I'm learning to say no to certain things. But yeah, it's kind of, sometimes there's just that desire to constantly push. And you know, always when you're pushing, it's not always going to be perfect, but you've got to push to get still further on than you would have been if you didn't push, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so no, it can be a juggle, but I mean, the team that work, particularly Thistle, they're amazing. They put up with so much of stressy Claire, like constantly kind of compared to startup business, and then this last few years with COVID and the economic side, and then seeing ethically what's happening in terms of the wars and everything, you're like, oh my goodness, I love to read the news, but I'm severely depressed sometimes when I read it, and I get a bit overwhelmed. So they've all, you know, they've all accommodated Claire, the very kind of impasse person, coming in sometimes and just feeling like, oh, what are we going to do? So the team are amazing. So yeah, I mean, talented beyond measure, in terms of so many of them have never done any of this before, but they give it a go, and what they're doing is superb. And then, yeah, I'm kind of working with somebody who's kind of like, what's she doing? She's got, you know, like, we need to, like, I remember one time when I said to me, my God, you're mad, Claire. It's like, we should maybe just limit how much people could buy. Like, we put a restriction on their account. They're like, what? And I'm like, because people shouldn't be buying so much stuff. And they're like, we're a business. And I'm like, I know we're a business, but we really shouldn't, like, even if people love our stuff, they shouldn't be buying this much.
So I wish somebody would just do that on my card.
So they kind of look at me like I'm mad, which I am. But they're, yeah, so the team are incredible. And yeah, my family, you know, my mum and my husband and my grown-up kids now, they've tolerated 6 years of hardly seeing mum. Well, they do see me. But yeah, my mum and my husband, yeah, have just totally kind of thought, right, they could see where I was coming. It wasn't just like a business venture and Claire's going to do her own company. And, you know, they could see how much it meant to me personally and this whole journey of justice and paving the way for the next generation, you know. I've got two young kids and I want the world to be better for them and everybody else's child that I'll never meet, you know. So I couldn't do it without that support network, the ones I work with and my family. Yeah, and chocolate. I had to go back to the chocolate.
Amazing. And I think my probably last question for you,
yeah,
because you've not had a sip of coffee the whole time, is what's been the biggest thing you've learned over the last 6 years?
Oh my god, hash can take quite a lot of stress. I've realised there's been so many learnings. Yeah, at times proud for sure of not giving up and things like that, but yeah, I just feel there's something that's drawing me and keeping me going. But yeah, so being resilient, I always think, oh well, that's that year, you know, you think startup, you know, having worked in business world before in finance capacity, you know, I know there's challenging points in getting something off the ground, etc. You know, you look at, you know, in terms of growth, my old job and growth and scale, whatever, every year's been totally different. But yeah, I'm way more resilient going slowly mad. Maybe that's what the answer is.
You know, but I think that makes the great genius. Some of that madness.
I'm on the edge of, oh, maybe we should do some sort of Mensa test. No.
Thank you so much for being our first guest on the Executive Podcast. Okay, it's been lovely to speak to you.
No, you too, Rachel.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Executive Podcast. You can sign up to our free newsletter at hnmedia.co.uk/executive magazine. We partner with stakeholders to keep you up to date with everything that is happening across all sectors within the North of Scotland economy.